Welcome to Parenting Teens with Dr. Cam, where we tackle the challenges of raising teenagers without the drama. I'm your host, Dr. Cam. Let's get on with the show. Are you one of the many parents grappling with the challenge of getting your teenager to sleep? You're not alone. Studies show that approximately 70% of teenagers are sleep deprived. This lack of adequate rest not only impacts their academic performance, but also their physical and mental health. To shed light on this issue, I've invited Dr. Angela Holiday Bell to join us today. Dr. Holiday Bell, a board certified physician and certified clinical sleep specialist, will be sharing her expertise and top strategies for ensuring our teens get the rest they need for optimal health and well-being. Dr. Holiday Bell, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So help us understand first, what got you interested in sleep?
Yeah. So I became interested in sleep really through my own journey and struggle. I am a board certified pediatrician by training, and I'm someone who has always had a deep, loving relationship with sleep, I like to say. But as I started to go throughout my medical training, specifically residency, I started to struggle with insomnia and very much so became a worse version of myself. And it's actually one of the most frustrating experiences I ever had. So I started with my own journey to fix my sleep. Read every single book there was about sleep, volunteered in the sleep clinic, started to learn some therapeutic practices, and the process fell in love with sleep. Put those practices into place in my own life and saw how my life changed for the better, and then knew I had to help other people do the same.
I love that. And you look so refreshed. And I was saying I had a terrible night of sleep and I feel so not refreshed. So I think this is such a great representation of what it looks like, good sleep versus not good sleep. So tell us first, because I know parents are so frustrated when it comes to their teen sleep. Like, it is a constant struggle. So help us first understand, what is going on? Why do they want to stay up till 3 a.m. and then they won't get up out of bed in the morning?
Yeah. So first, I like to say, let's give our teenagers some grace. I think it's difficult being on the other side and being adult and fully understanding just how important sleep is and trying to translate that to our kids in general, but particularly our teenagers, it's difficult. The other thing that makes it difficult, though, is that there is a biological and genetic change that happens in the teenage and adolescent period where the circadian rhythm actually shifts on average 2 to 3 hours, sometimes more, meaning that they naturally do not get sleepy until 2 to 3 hours later than they have been before. So that's like midnight, 1 o'clock. That is biological. They can't really help it. That is a natural shift that happens. And so it's a part of a struggle that they have really no control over. So meeting them with grace from that standpoint, understanding that there is something biological that happens. Obviously, when you have that shift, that means you're getting sleepy later. So then, of course, you're wanting to wake up later as well. And then what often happens is they miss out on so much sleep during the week, typically the school week, that when the weekends come, they try to pay off all of that debt. And so they sleep in even later to the afternoon. I remember myself, little Dr. Angela Bell, as a teenager, everyone knew, don't even like attempt to reach me before noon, because that's not going to happen.
Right.
So there's a lot going on biologically that's contributing to this, in addition to the world of social media, the electronics that's stimulating them all throughout the night and also making it difficult for them to fall asleep.
Yeah. So I think what's really important here is that this is something that they can't help. It's something that is biological. And I have talked to a lot of teenagers who say they'll, you know, their parents get upset with them for being on their phones at night, but they say, I just can't sleep. It's not that the phone's keeping me up. It's that I don't know what to do because I'm laying there staring at the ceiling and I need something to do because otherwise my mind goes crazy, right? So how do we help our kids get enough sleep, first of all? Like, can we change that bedtime? Because they have to get up and go to school. So how do we help them get to sleep earlier?
Yeah. So even though it is biological and there's not much they can do about the fact that they naturally get sleepy later, there are things we can do environmentally to help shift that back. Mm-hmm. What I like to compare it to is people who are natural night owls. I personally am a natural night owl. Naturally for me, I would fall asleep somewhere around midnight and get up somewhere around 9 a.m. But life doesn't work like that. I have responsibilities well before 9 a.m. That does not allow me to do that. So I have to be strategic and intentional about the way that I set up my environment, my sleep schedule that allow me to get sleepy earlier and still get the appropriate amount of sleep. So we can do the same thing with our teens. As you mentioned, oftentimes they're on their phone and computers are like, I'm not sleepy, so I might as well do this. However, that does put them in this vicious cycle of participating in a stimulating activity when they're already not sleepy. It's easier for them to be stimulated, further delaying their sleep. And so it is a cycle that builds upon itself. The first thing I recommend is having an honest conversation with your kids, particularly teenagers, and partnering with them on their healthy sleep habits, coming up with a plan together to get them to get healthy sleep and helping them to understand why it's important. This is not just a rule that we're implementing because we want to take away your social life and want to take away your fun, but this is actually important for your overall functioning. I think what can be really helpful is meeting kids where they are and helping them to understand how this affects the things that they care about. So if you have a kid who's an athlete, their physical performance and athletic performance is going to be hindered by not getting enough sleep. Studies have shown that they're actually twice as likely to obtain an injury during their sports if they're not getting enough sleep. So saying like, hey, you want to make it to whatever nationals, you want to be the best baseball, football player, whatever, actually your sleep is going to impact that. And so meeting them where they are and helping them to understand that and then putting practices into place that can help them fall asleep sooner, like taking electronics away within an hour of the bedtime, charging it outside of the room, but helping them to come up with some other activities that they can do that are more conducive to sleep during that time.
That is so key, because I think what happens is there ends up being every single night, there ends up being this battle, right? Exactly. So now not only are they not getting enough sleep, but they're going to bed angry.
Yes.
They're fighting over their phones. They're sneaking their phones. We're upset with them. So I think a lot of this is having that plan. And I know parents really struggle because kids are extraordinarily resistant to giving up their phones at night. Yes. And a lot of it is because that's when they actually are on all their friends are on their phones and they want to talk to them. So give us some ideas on how we can help them get those phones out, and also what are some ways that we can convince? I love that you were saying it's important to go with what matters to your kids.
Yes.
What are some good arguments parents can come up with that kids might care about on why to get those phones out of the room?
Yeah. So in my experience, the athletic performance is a huge one, because that is often for kids who are athletes, they really care about that. And so they're like, oh, shoot, if there's anything that's going to give me the upper hand, I probably should look into this. Even partnering with coaches and athletic trainers to also present that message can be helpful to reinforce that academic performance, especially in the high school years where they may be taking standardized testing and, you know, thinking about getting into college, getting enough sleep is absolutely going to help them improve in that way too. So partnering with them on that, helping them to come up with a plan of things that they can do outside of being on the phone before they go to bed. And also understanding that this is just for an hour before you're going to sleep. It's not for the whole day or the entire evening. Also letting them know it is hard. I understand that you want to be communicating with your friends. I understand that this is not easy. I'm not telling you should just give up your phone and this is fine and you're going to be happy about it. I understand this is difficult, but just like doing homework can be difficult, taking tests can be difficult, eating your vegetables can be difficult, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't do it. So really partnering with them and coming to a place where you're like, yeah, I understand. What can we do together to make this work for you? The other thing is modeling these healthy behaviors for your kids, right? So as parents, we're often on our phones a lot as well, and even working, right? Taking the computer to bed with you. And when you're doing those things and you tell your kid, oh, no, but you need to get rid of your phone before you go to bed.
Right.
That doesn't really connect either, right? So we need to model those healthy behaviors for them, make it a whole family thing. Everyone in their family charges their phone in this one space. But what are some other fun things that you can do? Let's think about some audiobooks you can listen to, some music that you enjoy that you can listen to instead. And then partnering over and over, checking in with them. Again, it's not going to be an easy sell by any means, but your best bet is meeting them where they are, talking about things that they care about, and then allowing them to participate in the plan while also modeling the healthy behaviors.
All extraordinarily good tips, and not all easy to do, especially the modeling part, right? Okay, so let's say our teen wants to get sleep. And they're telling us, I go to bed and I stare at the ceiling all night long and I just can't sleep. And I hear this a lot from kids. Yeah. How do we help them?
So that's a great question. I think that is where a lot of the struggle comes in. When the kid is like, no, I understand it's important, I just can't sleep. It's about first understanding that, again, they may not be sleepy at that time, right? So it's like, as an adult, if we're telling ourselves, okay, by 6 p.m., we need to be asleep, that's going to be difficult. Even if we get into bed, it's unlikely we're going to fall asleep at 6 p.m. So there are a couple of different strategies you can use. The first thing is called bedtime fading, right? Where if a child is normally falling asleep or getting sleepy at, let's say, midnight, right? Not ideal, but that's the time they're already going to sleep. Instead of going from midnight to 9 p.m., that's a 3-hour difference. They're likely, their melatonin is not being released at that time yet. They're likely not going to be sleepy. Move the bedtime up to 11:45 for a couple days, and then 11:30, and then 11:15. You're slowly allowing their circadian rhythm to adjust. And because they're sleepy at that time, it's less likely that racing thoughts, anxiety, and all those things are going to keep them up, and it makes it easier to adjust. So kind of slowly giving them time to adjust. This is one of the times that I actually think a low dose, the key is low dose, and short-term course of melatonin can be helpful.
Okay.
I think that people overuse melatonin for sure. It's not a sleeping pill, especially for kids. Kids in general tend to actually have more melatonin production than adults do. The problem is, if they have that circadian rhythm shift, that melatonin production is just not happening until much later in the night. So short course, 1 milligram, an hour before the desired bedtime for just 3 or 4 days until you get them on track, and then take it off and allow just the normal healthy sleep behaviors to take over. It can be helpful. And then the other thing is, if there's someone who's really struggling, they get into bed and there's anxieties or racing thoughts that come up, helping them to disconnect the bed from that stress and anxiety surrounding sleep. Meaning, if you're lying in bed and you can't fall asleep within like 30 minutes, to get out of your bed, not get on your phone, not get on your computer, but do journaling, read a book, listen to music, give them the power to not have to force themselves to sleep, and say, hey, if sleep isn't coming, let me do some other relaxing activity until sleep does come. And then I get back into my bed, and that will actually help sleep to come easier on subsequent nights.
So you were talking about disconnecting bed from anxiety. And I know a lot of kids spend a lot of time laying on their bed, scrolling on their phones, not at night, but just in general. Does that impact their ability to sleep?
It absolutely does. So we recommend reserving the bed for sleep only. And yes, in adolescence, they're eating in bed, they're talking on the phone, they're on their computer, they're doing all these things. And what that does is dilutes the relationship that the brain has between the bed and sleep. So when they get in bed, they're like, do we send some digestive enzymes? Because this is when I start snacking. Are we going to be talking to a friend? The brain is not sure what's going to happen. So oftentimes, a kid's room is their space, especially as adolescents. Like, this is space that they have ownership of. They want to spend a lot of time in there, and that's okay. There should be separate spaces within that room that they use for those other activities, a desk, a separate chair, beanbag, whatever, and reserve the bed for sleep only in order to strengthen that relationship.
That's a good conversation to have with them too. And I think getting a really cool chair. I have a swing chair that I love, that's going to be fun for them to not have to be in bed. But I think that's really important that they have that space. Now there's the child that we just can't get up in the morning. No matter what time they go to bed, we struggle to get them up, and they are grumpy, and it's just, we're constantly, help us with that.
So that is likely related to not only the circadian shift, but also someone who is a natural night owl means that their circadian rhythm is not going to be sending those alerting signals early in the morning, no matter when they fall asleep. I can attest to that. My optimal performance time is going to be in the early to late afternoons, regardless of when I go to sleep. Like, even though I've trained myself to be able to get enough sleep to wake up in the morning, I'm not functioning at my peak in the morning. I'm still tired. I still need an alarm clock because my body's like, no, we're not ready for this yet. This is not when we send these signals. So it's going to be similar with a child who is a night owl. But the way to help mitigate that is, number one, keeping that wake time consistent, even on the weekends. So what often happens is, during the week, we're waking up for school. On the weekends, we're sleeping in 3 to 4 hours, and you miss the opportunity to really train and reinforce the circadian rhythm to start sending those alerting signals at the same time. So it's about the consistency of the schedule, and then allowing those external cues to really help promote alertness as well, which is natural light exposure, opening up the blinds. If it's summertime, wintertime, like here in Chicago, and it's still dark in the mornings, using a light therapy box or some other simulation, a sunrise alarm clock can be helpful. All of those things can help the child to be more alert and awake in the mornings, but also understanding some of that may still be there if they are naturally, truly, very much so a night owl, and those alerting signals are just not getting sent at that time.
Yeah. What are some other ways to get them, slowly get them awake, that will help them wake up?
Yeah. So that sunrise alarm clock can be helpful. You can set their regular alarm clock to play their favorite song, like a favorite energizing song that they really love, that they connect to, that really gets them going, opening up their blinds. Like I said, not allowing them to hit snooze. So again, that may mean that their alarm clock is put out of reach such that they have to get up and physically turn it off, and they can't just like reach over and hit the snooze button several times. All those things can help wake them up and get them going.
Okay. I've seen those alarm clocks too that like move around and you have to like chase it around or something and try to do that.
That's also an option.
I used to wake up to my favorite song and it became my least favorite song because then when I had to get out of bed. So that was a good way to ruin a song too. But now we've got, so the other thing is we've got a teenager that sleeps all the time. Like all they want to do is sleep, and they're in bed until 2 p.m. on weekends, and what's going on?
So that can be twofold. So what I often see happen when parents come and say they're sleeping all the time, like they come home from school, they're asleep, and then over the weekend they're asleep. What's actually happening is that they are trying to make up for sleep debt. So they come home from school, they take a 5-hour nap, they're up the entire night. So they're actually not getting sleep overnight. They've missed out on all the sleep during the week, and so they're sleeping in on the weekend. So it feels to you, because the time that you're awake, they're asleep, but really the time they're supposed to be sleeping, they're awake. So it really is important to determine, are they sleeping overnight and sleeping all throughout the day, or are they just getting their sleep during the day and not sleeping overnight? 99% of the adolescents that I talk to that have trouble sleeping absolutely take a very long nap after school. I'm like, do you nap after school? Yeah, I do. And it's like 2 to 3 hours. They're like, but I'm not sleepy by my bedtime. And of course you're not, because you've stolen from that sleep drive that has built up all day, and now you're, you know, refreshed and ready to go. So it really is actually important to not allow them to nap after school when they come home. A short power nap in the mornings, on the weekends, great. Again, power nap being no more than 20 to 30 minutes, but not 2-3 hours after school. That's going to throw things off. Now, if you're like, no, I have a child who is sleeping all night, all day, always sleepy, always tired, they may have a sleep disorder. It could be something that we just call idiopathic hypersomnia, meaning they are always being driven towards sleep no matter how long they sleep. And there are management options for that, or narcolepsy. People view narcolepsy as this like thing where they have the cataplexy, they're passing out when they laugh and all those things. And that is a subset of it. That's a part of it. But not every child who has narcolepsy has those symptoms. It could just be that they're tired all the time. Mm. The other thing is, how is their sleep quality? Things like obstructive sleep apnea, restless leg syndrome, also happen in kids. Those are not just disorders of adults. And if we don't address that, even though they're sleeping, they're not getting quality sleep. So they're always tired because their sleep is broken. So if you know that they're sleeping all that time and they're still sleepy, absolutely they need to see their medical provider to investigate a little further.
One thing I did not hear you say is it's because they're lazy.
Absolutely not. Yes.
Uh-huh. I feel like that's a go-to assumption a lot of times when our kids are sleeping all the time, or that they're avoiding trying to do, you know, I'm going to sleep so I can avoid doing my homework or avoid doing chores. Yeah. But what I'm hearing is there's a need. When they're sleeping, there's a need for sleep.
There's a need. And that is why I started with saying, let's give them some grace. Because what I also have run into are kids who are very high performers, and they go to school and they're in 3 clubs and they have a job and they're in sports. And they're like, listen, by the time I'm done with everything, it's 11 p.m. and I have to get up at 5 a.m. for a morning practice, right? Like, there are some times that that's really the case. And then we have to look at what's important and how we can, you know, arrange the schedule in a different way. But oftentimes there's just the need, like biologically, they're not tired. They're sleeping at different times. They have all these other responsibilities. We need to give them grace and really partner with them on this.
If they're going during the week and they've got, you know, they go to bed, or they go to school early because they have club before, and then they're up late because they've got sports, and then they have to do their homework and they're up until 1 a.m. doing homework, and this is every day of the week, on the weekends, can they make up that sleep?
So no, in a sense that you can never make up the functions that sleep would have had for each night that you miss out on it. So every night, sleep has its own functions for that night. And your body is actually very beautifully able to determine how much of each sleep stage you need to make up for certain things and to help you function the next day. So you will never make up those missed functions. you can sleep off some sleep debt. And typically, again, I say keep the schedule as consistent as possible, keep rise time as consistent as possible. But if you're in a space, particularly as a teenager, where you are hitting the max amount of sleep you can during the week because of other responsibilities, I do think it's okay to allow them to sleep in a little bit more on the weekends. But then really looking at that schedule and finding out and figuring out what is really important, what's maybe some things we can switch around. Also, again, avoiding those naps right after school, getting right to your responsibilities and trying to allocate as much time as possible to sleep in.
Right. So those 20-minute naps are powerful, right? So then we've got this, there's another question always is how much sleep? And I've heard a lot of different numbers, but I hear teens need more sleep than adults do. Is mm-hmm. this true? And how much sleep should our teens be getting?
Yes, it's true. So on average, teens need 8 to 10 hours, really. So 9 hours is a good number. Oftentimes, even parents feel like, oh, they need 7 to 8 hours, like similar to us. But no, they truly need, I would say minimum 8, but sometimes 9, closer to 10 hours. Yeah. Also understanding that everybody is different. So I like to say sleep need is like shoe size. There's no one size fits all. So there may be some teenagers that need a little bit more, maybe some that need a little bit less, but it's about determining what their sleep need is. Oftentimes, it's going to be more than they need as adults, and really trying to hit that number. And again, that sometimes that can be difficult to come by, because on the weekends they're sleeping for 12, 14 hours, and then during the week they're not sleeping well. So it's about having that consistent sleep and helping them to meet their sleep need.
Yeah, that's really hard because teens struggle to get even the 8 hours or 6 hours of sleep in because there's so much that they're doing. So what a lot do is they turn to these little energy drops, drinks, and shots, and tons of Starbucks and Dunkin' Donuts and coffee. How is that impacting their sleep? Or is this good? Is this helping them stay awake when they need to?
Yeah, not good.
I knew that answer, but I was going to ask anyway.
I do not recommend all of the caffeine and energy drinks for kids. First of all, I think it can be dangerous when you have too high of a caffeine load. It's not common, but rarely we've seen it trigger some arrhythmias and things like that. So I recommend just stay, especially the energy drinks, like stay away from those. Caffeine in and of itself for kids, for adults, though, can absolutely impact sleep. So the biggest issue with caffeine, and this is coming from someone who is, I love coffee. It's one of the loves of my life. Like, I'm a cat. I'm a coffee ally. You just have to drink responsibly, right? I have to preface it with that. But caffeine has a long half-life of about 5 to 6 hours, meaning it takes 5.5-ish hours for half the amount you consumed to be excreted from your system. So if you have a drink that contains 400 milligrams of caffeine, and let's say it's 2 p.m., then by 7 p.m., you still have 200 milligrams in your system. And then by midnight, you still have 100 milligrams in your system. So that could absolutely be enough to still be causing you to remain awake. And so I recommend, especially in adolescents, trying to avoid it, period. If they're going to have these types of drinks, really trying to limit it before noon into the lowest dose necessary. The other thing is, I think it becomes a crutch, right? Then they feel like, well, I don't really need to sleep because I'll just, you know, have my energy drink or my Starbucks and I'm good to go. And we don't want to reinforce that behavior either. So ideally no caffeine, but really trying to limit the intake if they're definitely going to have it.
Yeah, I think that's become just a society thing too. Like, everyone goes and just can't function until they've got their dose of coffee, because do you think we're all sleep deprived in a way? I think a lot of us are sleep deprived.
So many people. Many people, because I have, even adults will be like, no, I'm good. 5 hours of sleep is fine. But then they're like, but you're drinking 4 cups of coffee a day to get by. Like, that's not fine. You need that to function, and you shouldn't need that to function.
What are some signs that our kids are sleep deprived versus they're just trying to fit in the right amount of sleep?
Yeah, so it really comes down to daytime functioning often. So a lot of times we'll see kids, when they're not stimulated enough, falling asleep inadvertently. Really, for anyone, if you are falling asleep without enough stimulation, right? If there's something, even if some mundane thing going on and you're falling asleep, that is a sign that you're not getting enough rest. So even if they're in a class that they're not interested in, if they're consistently falling asleep, they're not getting enough rest. The other thing, though, to know about kids is that sometimes they can be hyperactive, and that is a sign of not getting enough rest, right? So they're kind of wired and bouncing off the walls. They lose the ability to rationalize their executive functioning, which is the kind of the frontal part part of the brain isn't functioning as well. It's actually so much so that any kid that you are concerned has ADHD, you should actually investigate their sleep habits first, because not getting enough sleep can look so much like ADHD because of the impacts on executive functioning.
That is great information to know.
Yeah. Any of those things. I have definitely had multiple kids that are like, yeah, we think they have ADHD. They can't focus. They're all over the place. They're active. And I'm like, okay, well, how's their sleep? Oh, they snore a lot. They wake up multiple times. Turns out they have sleep apnea. Treat the sleep apnea. Treat the ADHD symptoms. So it can definitely present in that way.
That's huge. What are some things that we can do, like either with their diet or just bedtime routines, that can help kids and us adults sleep better?
Yeah. So in terms of diet, iron actually plays a big role in sleep. Iron deficiency can impact sleep quality and can lead to restless leg syndrome symptoms. Mm-hmm. So things like green leafy vegetables, which can also be difficult for, you know, our kids to, right. to get enough of. Protein, all those things is going to be important. One of my favorite minerals or supplements for sleep is magnesium glycinate. I personally take supplements every single night. Again, green leafy vegetables, legumes, all those things are rich in that. We tend to not have enough of that in our diet, but that helps to kind of calm the nervous system and make sleep easier to come by, so to speak. So I definitely recommend trying to increase that in the diet. And if not, there's actually nothing wrong with magnesium glycinate supplements. And then bedtime routine is all about allowing the brain to transition from the stress, anxiety of the day to the calmness and stillness of the sleep, and incorporating whatever activities that the child finds relaxing. And that may look a little bit different from one child to another. It's important to refrain from stimulating activities like the phone. The other thing too, though, that adults don't even realize is light in general affects your ability to fall asleep, because it's telling your brain that you want to be awake and alert. So yes, the blue light from electronics do that, but also normal overhead lighting, normal room lights, tell your brain that you actually want to be awake and alert, and can delay your melatonin release by up to 90 minutes. So making sure that they're dimming the light, using bedside table lamps and all those things added in the bedtime routine, can help their natural melatonin release to be sent earlier and help them transition to sleep.
That's huge. What have I missed? What else do I need to know about sleep in my kid?
I mean, I think the biggest thing for me when I talk to parents about sleep really is modeling healthy sleep behaviors. Mm. I really think that, even though we touched on that a bit, I think it's about setting the stage, right? When we want our kids to eat healthy, when we want to say exercise is important, if we're not doing that ourselves and modeling that in the homes, it's going to be harder for them to buy into it, because it's so important, but you're not doing it. So really modeling those healthy sleep behaviors, having conversations. I think when it is a disconnected, like, do this because I said so type thing, it becomes about more of a battle than it is about the partnership. And especially in adolescence, they want to feel like I have control over myself and my actions. And like, you know, they think they're adults and they're like, I don't need you for any of this. So helping them to partner on it with you is going to be the best way to meet them where they are and get them involved. So really having those conversations, this is why this is important. Even if they don't understand it right at that moment, they'll look back and be like, oh yes, okay, I get it now. So really, and then getting their input as to why they're having trouble sleeping, right? Again, sometimes we assume that they're lazy or you just want to be on your phone all night with your friends. But sometimes it's deeper than that, but no one's ever asked them. So really asking them what's going on and saying, okay, how can I help make this easier for you is going to be the best way to get the results you want.
That one is so important, because a lot of the kids I talk to want to get more sleep and they just can't. And that is so frustrating for them. And they even dread bedtime because it's going to be this struggle for them and they don't want to just stare at the ceiling. So definitely getting into that. What is the one key thing that parents can do right now, right today, to help our kids start getting better sleep?
Yeah, I think the kind of theme throughout this for me has been partnership. Partnering with your child, coming to them, having a conversation, looking at their full schedule. Like I said, sometimes there's just so many responsibilities that they find it difficult to do. Partner with them, have the conversation, say, hey, let's talk about what works best here. Let's talk about, and then starting with small changes too, right? Because again, if they're going to sleep at midnight, 1 o'clock, and like, oh, you're going to sleep at 9 p.m., we're taking the phone at 8, that's probably not going to work. But what are some small changes we can start with and then build upon that? I think that partnership is more important than parents realize.
Dr. Holiday Bell, that is the theme across every single topic that we cover, is the fact that it has to be a partnership and we have to do it with them. And it's about that connection. Trying to push our kids, even though it's the right intent and getting them the right thing, just is going to be a battle. So I appreciate that with sleep, it is also the same thing. When you have that connection, that the rest of it will come. How do people find you if they need help with their sleep?
Yeah, the best way to find me is through my website, thesolutionissleep.com. It has my socials on there, my email, my book, other information and material. That's the best way to kind of find all the things.
Wonderful. I will put all of that in the show notes. Dr. Holiday Bell, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
This was wonderful. And thank you, parents, for taking time out of your busy day to join us. I really appreciate you too. If you found this episode enlightening, take a quick second to click the follow button, then forward it to a friend. Until next time, stay curious. Remember, there's always more to the story than what you see. And that's a wrap. Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of Parenting Teens with Dr. Cam. Don't forget to hit follow so you don't miss a single episode, and share the love by passing this on to a friend. Until next time, keep making a positive impact in your teen's life.